Hello, Columbus, Chattahoochee Valley, all my friends near the Georgia-Florida line. I hope you guys are doing well. I'm still sending prayers to our friends out in Talbot County. Some people out there are still recovering from the major tornadoes that came through, as well as some of our friends over in Lee County and Russell County in that area, and North Columbus. We haven't forgotten about you either. But there's certainly something we need to keep our eye on, because as spring kicks in a little further, we expect the storms to intensify, and we just got to make sure we'll look out and be on the lookout for each other. So we'll talk a little bit more about that next Sunday as we all prepare for the spring storms that usually come with the change of weather. But we are going to continue this Sunday with our conversation about women here in the Columbus area that are local history themselves, women that have made a significant impact on our community and broken some glass ceilings, shattered glass ceilings, however you want to put it, and are still making huge impacts. So as you recall, we had Miss Gloria Battle on with us. We had Judy Purnell, and we had Linda Parker. And so today's show is not going to be an exception to what you've already heard this month. I have another dynamic, powerful, phenomenal, I mean, this trailblazer. I mean, she defines trailblazer. If you look at her in the dictionary, trailblazer, they got this latest picture. And I tell you, she is just one that will follow her own path, and she's not afraid to blaze that trail regardless of anybody that may try to tell her otherwise or get in her way. And she serves us all right here in Muskogee County. I am honored to have with me today the clerk of our municipal court office, Ms. Vivian Creighton Bishop, who is also the wife of our congressman, our esteemed congressman, Congressman Sanford Bishop of the 2nd Congressional District. How are you doing today, Ms. Bishop?
I'm doing wonderful, Teddy, and thank you so much for having me on.
Ms. Bishop, it is an honor to have you here today. I know you stay busy, so I'm glad that you find some time to come and talk with us today. And, you know, when I first heard about your story, I was just so impressed. And I was like, why do we not hear this story more often? Because it's something that certainly can be used as an inspirational tool for young women and professional leaders in this city that's looking to move on. So we're going to talk about you today, okay?
Okay.
Is that okay?
That's fine.
I know
that's
you're
fine.
A modest person, and you don't like talking about yourself, but we want to do that today. Okay. Just a little bit, okay?
Okay.
Now let's talk about, were you born and raised here in this area? Yeah. Tell us about your transition to Columbus.
Okay. I was born at Fort Benning, Georgia, but when I'm asked, I say Columbus. When I'm asked where I'm from, I say Columbus, Georgia.
Okay.
But I'm a military brat.
Wow, so you come from a military family?
Yes, I do.
And that introduced you to Columbus?
Yes.
And around what age was it that you arrived here?
Oh, no, I was born at Fort Benning.
Okay.
My mother has lived here all her life, and my father was from this area, transitioned from Philadelphia, but he spent most of his time here in Columbus.
So you've never left Columbus?
Oh, yeah, I've been around the world two or three times. I have left Columbus.
Okay.
In fact, I finished high school in Germany, my second tour of Germany, and I attended middle school, I guess you would call it, in Arizona. So I've traveled the world, and I'm still traveling.
So what brought you back to Columbus after traveling in so many different places?
Well, like I said, I finished high school in Germany. I started my freshman year of high school here in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister and I both finished high school in Germany. My father retired a few years after that, and that brought us back to the States. And I lived in Atlanta for a while and decided that was a bit fast for me, and I returned to Columbus. My sister never came back to Columbus.
Now when you returned to Columbus, what's your memory of the political scene when you arrived back?
Well, when I arrived back looking for something to do and looking to get involved in the community, I think my first venture into the political scene was I started working with the Jimmy Carter campaign.
And that was when he was running for governor or for president?
For president.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what was your role there?
I did canvassing and mm-hmm. worked in the campaign headquarters, and whatever I could volunteer to do, I did.
What motivated you to do that?
Just wanted to get involved in the community, and someone asked me if I would volunteer to work with his campaign, and I said yes, I would, and I did.
Wow, wow. Did we have an active Democratic Party during that time?
Yes, we did. We certainly did.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Were you involved with the Democratic Party?
I was.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so you worked with President Jimmy Carter on his campaign, and that mm-hmm. was a successful election, right?
It was. It certainly was. And it gave me...
And it was a big deal to have a president from Georgia.
Yes. And so close to us, from Plains, Georgia, just down the road.
Right, right. Wow, wow. Okay, so was that what gave you that bug to get into politics, or did you need a little bit more convincing?
I need a little more convincing, quite a bit of convincing. It wasn't until 1992 I was asked to run for the office that I'm in now, and at first I said no for 2 or 3 months. Mm. I had been appointed to serve as a jury commissioner for Muskogee County by the then Superior Court Judge John Land.
Wow. Okay. So John Land appointed you to be a jury commissioner, and mm-hmm. and you declined running for municipal court clerk a few times. What made you finally say yes?
Prayer. I had a voice to just tell me you need to do it, and as you know, there's qualifying time. That's usually about a week mm-hmm. before the deadline for you to qualify for an office. And I had a then attorney Gary Parker and Judge Land to just keep pushing me to run. What happened was I went to the office of the superior of municipal court with a friend of mine, mm-hmm. and I was not happy with the service she received, or the lack of service. And I complained to Judge Land after I asked who would I file a complaint about the services that we received in that office. And they said, that's in the elected office. If you want to make some changes, you have to run. And that came from Judge Land. And then Gary Parker was a very good friend of mine. And I said, well, I'm not interested in running for public office. At the time, I was the controller at Jack T. Rutledge Correction Institution.
Mm-hmm. Now, that was a big responsibility itself.
Yes, it was. I moved from Atlanta here to assist in opening that institution.
Wow. Wow. Talk about being the change that you want to see. If anybody ever mm-hmm. needed an example of that cliche, I tell you, we're hearing it right now. Mm-hmm. So after the service that you experienced with a friend in municipal court that you were not happy with, that was that last motivation in addition with prayer that took you over.
I believe so. And it was it was just a half an hour before the cutoff, the deadline to qualify.
Wow.
That I went down to the Democratic office, the headquarters, and sign up to run for that office.
Wow. 20-something years of service came down to the last half hour of qualified.
Yes, 27 years it did.
27 years.
Yes, yes.
Oh, my God. Okay. So you prepared for your campaign, and,
yes.
and now you're getting ready for your campaign. What are you thinking as young Vivian Creighton? You were not married then, right?
No, I wasn't.
So as young Vivian Creighton, what mm-hmm. were you thinking in preparation for that campaign?
I was thinking, what on earth have I done and what on earth am I going to do? So I contacted some friends and family. Calvin Smyre, one of the first ones, his mother, my mother, first cousin. Mm-hmm. So I went to him and he said, do you know what you've done? And I said, no. And I guess I cried so, and it was so emotional about it. And then I called Judge Land and Gary Parker. They said, well, wonderful. You know, you can do it. And it's going to take a lot of work. It's a citywide office, and you've got to work hard and you've got to work long. And I had not been in Columbus, back in Columbus that long, but I had friends from childhood mm-hmm. from visiting Columbus during the summers and in between the times my father was signing up for some other duty station for us to move to relocate to.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, there had not been any other African-American female to be elected to a countywide office here in Muskogee County.
Yes, you're right. You're right.
Were there any women in office at that time?
Any African-American women?
Yes, ma'am.
One that I remember, and that was Evelyn Turner Pugh.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And she was on city council.
She was on city council.
Had a particular district.
Yes, she
but
had a district.
No African-American woman had been elected to a countywide office.
No, no.
That was a huge undertaking.
It sure was.
I want to ask you, how many nights did you go sleepless?
It's a lot of them. A lot of nights I went sleepless. But I had a lot of support, a lot of encouragement. And I think that what really pushing me to say I can make this happen is someone telling me it would not happen, that Columbus was not ready to elect an African-American, particularly a female, to a citywide office. They just weren't ready. And this was a professor then at Columbus State. I didn't respond. I just nodded my head at him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so and I set out to win.
What were some of the challenges that you endured during that campaign?
I think the one of the biggest challenges was the fact that I did not know just how large Columbus, Muskogee County was.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I didn't know enough people, but more people knew me than I knew them.
That is big.
Yeah. And
more people knew you than you knew them.
Yes.
That's why your reputation matters.
Yes.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And my parents, a lot of people knew my parents and other relatives who were professionals in the community and who knew me.
How old were you? Do you remember?
I believe when I ran for office, I was, don't make me say it.
Were you in your 30s?
Let's see, it was 27 years ago. Yes.
In your 30s? That's young.
Yes.
That's young.
Yes.
And you know, I talk to a lot of young professionals in their 30s now that contemplate running for office and, you know, seeking other leadership opportunities. Mm-hmm. And some of the same things you're saying now, I hear from them still now today.
Yes.
Why do you think that still persists with someone like you showing us that it's possible?
The things that happen to me along the way, just makes me think is hesitant for them to do that. Politics can be friendly or it can be unfriendly. And it just depends on the candidate, the people that you will represent, how you present yourself, your background, and just a number of things. And I think the ugliness in that politics can present discourages people, particularly young people. And people who are not necessarily from this area who have chosen this to make home, and just a number of things. Like I said, politics can be unfriendly as it is friendly.
So, as someone in their mid-30s running for office and having been away for a little short while and feeling that you didn't know enough people, did your support amount to what you expected it to be, or was it more than what you expected it to be?
Well, initially, I didn't know what to expect. Mm-hmm. At the time, the voter population in Muskogee County was predominantly Republican and predominantly white.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. Predominantly Republican?
Yes.
Now, Muskogee County has been a reliable Democratic county now for at least 10 years.
Well, this was in 1992 that I ran for office. Well,
did more African Americans just start getting engaged in the political arena, or did more move here? What was that shift?
I think a little bit of both.
A little bit of both?
Mm-hmm. I think they got more engaged. When I say we, those of us who were more engaged at that time, mm-hmm, encouraged people in this community, particularly young African Americans, to get involved in the process. So I think that it was a little both.
Wow. But you wouldn't conclude that there was some type of fear and intimidation going on, would you?
I think there was some type of fear, but I don't think we experienced a lot of intimidation in this area.
Okay.
In other surrounding areas, there was vote intimidation.
Mm-hmm.
But here, we seem to, the African-American community seemed to be stronger and more determined, and eventually it started happening.
You know, I'm sure a lot of people probably take for granted, with your last name being Bishop, that, oh, she must have run for that office while she was married to the congressman, and that was a launching pad for her. But we're learning today, and which I already knew, I'm glad you're sharing this, mm-hmm, that you did this on your own.
I did.
You are a woman that stands on your own two feet.
I am.
And you stand strongly and boldly.
Yes, I do.
Was that a part of your parents raising? I see your sister here nodding her head. Like, yes, sir, I agree with you. Was that your parents, or do you think that was the military background? Or what made Vivian so strong?
I think that both. The military background, the ability to meet and greet people and adjust to different areas and in the situations. And I think that my military background had a lot to do with it.
Wow. Wow. You are here listening to our municipal court clerk, the phenomenal Vivian Creighton Bishop, telling us about her journey to office, telling us about her journey to becoming the first African-American female to be elected to countywide office here in Muskogee County. Now, since her election, we've had Tax Commissioner Lula Huff to follow that same path. We've had at-large school board chairwoman, former chairperson, Kia Chambers. She's still the at-large member to follow that same path. And am I leaving out anyone countywide, black females?
Just recently,
Danielle Forte. How could I forget about Danielle? She's now our Superior Court clerk. We have African-American women running our Superior Court and our municipal court in one of the largest metropolitan areas in Georgia. We are fortunate here in Columbus, Georgia, to have that. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to dive in a little bit more with Ms. Bishop, and we're going to talk about, you know, her transition and some of the things she must have faced, because we know as an African-American woman stepping into an office for the first time, you know, having to walk through so many transition and hurdles, there had to be some obstacles. So we're going to talk about that when we get back. You don't want to miss it. We'll be right back.
Dear John, I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is serious, and I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to when you checked on me? I don't want to leave. But remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get yours to a healthy range today. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. If you missed the first half of this show, you have definitely missed an amazing treat. We are here today learning and being inspired and being motivated by the one and only, the phenomenal Ms. Vivian Creighton Bishop, who was the first African-American female in our city to be elected to countywide office when she was elected as our municipal court clerk. And if you heard her earlier, she says she was motivated to seek that position because she didn't like the service that was given in the office, and so she decided to be the change that she wanted to see. And she sought that office against advice, against a professor telling her that this area is not ready for a black woman to serve in countywide office. And look where we are now, 27 years later, she's still holding it down and still doing a magnificent job. And Ms. Bishop, I want to thank you again for being here with us. And let's talk a little bit about, okay, so you ran for office and we talked about that. I want to hear about the night of the election. Tell us about that day. If you can go back 27 years, I'm sure you'll probably never forget it, right? Tell us about that night. It was a primary?
I'm just trying to think back. Well, I'll tell you about that that night. Okay. I had a lot of friends, a lot of family, a lot of supporters, people that I didn't really know were supporting me as much as they were. And we had the watch party down that used to be the Howard Johnson restaurant down on Veterans Parkway. And I was told that I was cool. I was acting cool. I didn't appear to be nervous, but I was extremely nervous. And waiting for the results to come in was just nerve-wracking. Mm-hmm. And after results started coming in and I saw that I had won a few of the precincts, I just got more and more involved, and I relaxed a little bit, and I accepted the fact that I might not win, but I worked really hard, and I was determined.
Now, you were running against an incumbent.
Yes, I was.
Okay, so that's huge, you know, to the folks listening. That's very big to run against an incumbent and be successful. Now go ahead.
Okay. I just want to put that in there. And though my campaign workers, and I have to highlight two people that were with me from the beginning to the end, and that was Linda and Benny Parker.
Linda Parker.
Okay. Yes. Linda Parker and Benny Parker. And they taught me a lot. And I learned a lot about people. And I just prayed a lot, worked real hard. I did a lot of my own canvassing. I had the support of John Land and a commitment that he talked me into doing it. And he felt like he and Gary did a lot in terms of encouraging me to run. Mm-hmm. And they stayed with me the entire time. But they weren't just active, as active, physically active, like some of my other volunteers.
Now, I've heard many people that have been successful with political office talk about their paper headlines the next day.
Yes.
Was there any interesting headlines in the paper the next day after your election?
There was, and I tried to forget some of those headlines.
Oh, my.
But what happened was, there was mention of me being the first African and female to run a city race, mm-hmm. and particularly against an incumbent. Mm-hmm. The fact that I was African American was mentioned repeatedly because my opponent was a white female,
mm-hmm.
The incumbent. So I guess I was her opponent.
Right, right.
And there was a lot of talk about how hard I worked and what I did and the support that I had. The transition was a more colorful, I guess you could say, story.
Take us to the transition.
Well, after winning the office, the incumbent, from what I understand, what I was told, was very upset, and questioned the numbers, and so to speak. But I won by a pretty big margin. And I worked. That person, from what I understand, didn't do much work because she thought that she wouldn't have a problem with me winning.
Because you're just a little black girl that worked at the prison, so therefore you can't be a
threat. No, I was no longer at the prison then.
Oh, you're no longer at the
prison. Then I left the prison.
But you couldn't have been a threat to an incumbent, right? Of
course, that's what it was thought,
that's
yes.
Thought. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so after winning, I knew that I had to assume the duties of the office. The election was in November of 1992, and I was sworn in January of 1993. During that time, I had to select staff. I had to get ready to assume the duties of that office.
Did you have some guidance with this?
I had some. Mr. Parker really helped me with that transition.
Okay.
And, of course, I knew Sanford Bishop. We were friends, but mm-hmm. we weren't married. And he gave me some good insight on how to handle it.
Was he a senator then at that time?
At that time, he was running for U.S. Congress.
Running for Congress at that time. Okay.
He was running for Congress at that time. And I believe he had a runoff.
Mm-hmm.
And not really knowing just what to accept. Mm-hmm. I started getting what to expect. I started getting calls and messages about the then staff of municipal court. Some of them were not eager to meet me, and they weren't eager about me assuming the duties of that office. So there were a lot of unwelcome things said. There were a lot of threats. There were a lot of really racist remarks said, So, but I just felt like I had to be strong. The people had elected me, and I had to assume that duty and do it in the best way I thought was possible.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I think people forget sometimes that these seats belong to the people.
Exactly.
They don't belong to nobody.
That's right.
They don't belong to a group of folks. They don't belong to a subset. They don't belong to a family. They belong to the people.
People. Mm-hmm.
And you demonstrated that.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Now, so you transitioned into the office, and now you're working, serving the residents of Muskogee County as the municipal court clerk. What were some of your biggest challenges?
I think my biggest challenge was getting in the office. I got threats and had to have before that I even assumed the duties were sworn in, there was an effort to destroy the office, destroy files, make it difficult for me. I had to contact the mayor at that time and ask him for assistance in preventing them or trying to keep them from destroying files.
Yes.
And I had to request an audit of the office, and it was pretty ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And the first day that I was supposed to, I arrived at the office, there was a lady, one, a former staffer, who I chose not to continue with my administration. As a newly elected clerk, I had the opportunity to select my staff, and I couldn't be bound by my predecessor's decisions, and that's what I did.
Right.
I chose not to elect those who were very vocal and with very racist terminology, notes that were mailed to me that they wrote to each other and actually threw in the garbage can, and someone retrieved them and wrote it to me. So they filed a lawsuit against me, and we went to court. So my first year was in the courtroom, fighting for the right to select a staff as anyone else had the same right.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Now, once you got past all that, you know, you got a full functioning office, mm-hmm. and this office served a 4-year term.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have competition immediately following that?
I did. By someone who was a part of the staff. In the municipal court and the magistrate court worked hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a person in the magistrate court who decided that she would run against me at that time. There was one in municipal court who withdrew before the race actually started. So I did have opposition. And it was said to me, even by some of the people in the African American community, that you made a mistake by not hiring those white women, and there were 5 people that I didn't keep who didn't express a desire to help me or to support me, and I just felt like they wouldn't be healthy for the office going forward. So
how would anybody expect you to keep somebody around that's said negative things about you and you know are gonna work counterintuitive to what you're trying to accomplish?
Exactly.
That doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. It didn't make sense to me either.
But again, that brave and bold and tenacious Vivian Creighton said that this is my office.
Yeah.
The people elected me, mm-hmm. and so I'm going to run it accordingly.
Mm-hmm. And if I remember correctly, my first bid for re-election, I won by a larger margin than I did the first time.
Wow.
That told me something about the priorities, just as you mentioned, of the people in Columbus, you know. They had to have felt that I couldn't serve them, and they had elected me to do that with people who were not going to be supportive and would be disruptive to the office running smoothly.
Now we're in a different environment now, Ms. Bishop. We have black women that are seriously being considered as presidential candidates. We have a black woman that probably should be our governor right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we all know that story.
Yes.
And still waiting to hear if she's going to run for United States Senate. What would be your advice to any young female that's listening to this show today and say, you know, that Miss Bishop, she just inspired me. But they're still a little uncertain about who they are and their capabilities. What would you mm-hmm. say to that person?
I would say to think long, hard. And long and hard about your decisions. And if you decide to run for a public office, to go in with a strong, determined attitude to do what you want to do. Don't be discouraged by someone else's issues.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be discouraged about someone else's comments that are not supportive. And if you decide to do it, do it. You know, and to pray along the way. Prayer meant so much to me. I was brought up in the church, and I was taught how to pray at a very young age. I just really didn't realize that would be the time that I really, really, really practiced what was taught to me.
Wow. Now your daughter, I call her my cousin because we have the same last name.
Yeah.
Okay. But your daughter... she had to be less than 10.
I think so.
During this process, mm-hmm. because I think I'm a little older than her.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Now, what was it like being a mother and serving in elected office as the first black woman? Do you think that impacted your ability to raise your daughter? Or how did you make that work?
Well, it was a difficult time. I was a single parent. I was divorced from her father even before I decided to run for this office. But my mother, my sister, My close relatives were very supportive, and they stepped in when I was tired from campaigning or tired from forums or just worn out, and they stepped in, and they were very, very helpful to me. She was afraid. She didn't understand politics and know there were some mean people out there. But she was, didn't get involved in the campaign. She would help me count or do things like that. But she actually didn't get involved to the night, the day of the election. And then that's when she physically got involved, because she wanted me to win. She saw how hard I was working. And I think that gave her some pointers going forward in her life.
Wow. One last question, and I've asked all of my guests this for the month of February and the month of March, since we were, you know, looking at history, Black history generally, and women history this month. And I'm going to ask you this, even though you don't look a day over 35. I'm going to ask you this question. when the final chapter is written, and, you know, as I'm going to ask you this question, but I got to say this. Every time I ask this question, it reminds me of the poem that your husband quote when he talks about a minute, and we all have 60 seconds
in it. Exactly. Yes, okay.
It reminds me of this every time. But when the final chapter is written, and God has called you to be his angel and fight with him in heaven by his side, how do you want to be remembered here? What do you want your legacy to be?
I want to be remembered, I think, as an African-American female who was not afraid to step out. I've had a lot of firsts in my life. Not only the first African-American female to be elected citywide, the first African-American the chair of the Congressional Club of the United States Congress.
Wow.
The first American to chair a 100-year-old event, the first lady's luncheon, and this is the first lady of the United States of America.
Wow.
The first African-American female who has served in this office, the first person, period, who has served as long as I have in this office. I'm in my 27th year. The first African-American that had the opportunity to appoint another African-American female to serve as the chair of the First Lady of the United States of America luncheon. The first African-American I chaired Mrs. Obama's exit luncheon, and that was a first. So, don't be afraid to step out. There are a lot of opportunities to serve once people know that you can serve. I want to be remembered as that person. And that person that was a trailblazer, I hope, in the Muskogee County, the second largest city in the state of Georgia.
Wow. You have just heard some powerful words from a little bitty old Black girl born right here in Fort Benning, Georgia, raised primarily here in Columbus, and how she materialized that the success that you want is right outside of your comfort zone, and she stepped outside of that fear, and she described her boldness and her tenaciousness, and she did things people told her that she couldn't do, and she did it well, extremely well, to the point to where she broke records. If this isn't a phenomenal way to wrap up our Women History Month tribute, I don't know what is, than to have Miss Vivian Creighton Bishop. Miss Bishop, you are an inspiration and just unbelievable and phenomenal to so many people here, whether you know it or not. And you don't let your naysayers and distractors get to you. You do what you got to do, and you keep moving, and you work hard at what you're doing. We appreciate you for setting that example for young women, but also just young African Americans that do believe that opportunity exists, and that if we believe in ourselves, if we believe in our foundation, if we believe in our God, that a lot is possible. So it has truly been an honor to have you here today to wrap up our Women History Month, and thank you so much for being here.
And thank you for inviting me.
Awesome. Right. I have nothing else to say. This has been Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese, and you have just heard from the unbelievable, magnificent, I'm running out of words, phenomenal, Miss Vivian Creighton Bishop, our municipal court clerk. We'll kick off next Sunday. Technically, it will be March 31, but we got a special program designed where we're going to talk about preparation for the summer storms and what we need to do to make sure that our family members are safe and that we're all safe, considering what we just experienced here in this region. We have no reason to believe that our potential weather dangers for this summer is over, this spring or summer is over. So we just want to make sure you're prepared and that we have everything taken care of so that when you hear those sirens go off, you'll be ready to do what you need to do. But again, please reflect on what you heard today from Ms. Bishop and take that in and find that inspiration and that hope and that drive within yourself to take it to your next level. Because guess what? No one's going to take it there for you. If you don't do it, it will not happen. This has been Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese, and talk to you next Sunday. Opinions stated by various contributors to this broadcast, its website, and its radio programs are not to be considered necessarily the beliefs of this radio station or Davis Broadcasting. Do you have questions or concerns or want to be a guest on Sunday Conversation? Come and join me, Teddy Reese. Send me an email at sundayconversations@dbicolumbus.com.